From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Ari Snyder with the news on this day in Maine, Friday, April 11th, 2025. The U.S. Department of Education referred Maine to the Justice Department today over the state's refusal to accept a list of demands about transgender athletes. As Kevin Miller reports, the Trump administration is also threatening to cut off federal education funding to Maine.
The Trump administration had given Maine until close of business on Friday to agree to change its policy allowing transgender athletes to compete in girls' and women's sports. But the Maine Attorney General's office replied that the state would not sign the proposed resolution agreement from the U.S. Department of Education. Assistant Attorney General Sarah Forster also wrote that nothing in federal law requires such a policy change and that the two sides were, quote, at an impasse. The U.S. Department of Education quickly responded by referring Maine to the Justice Department for further enforcement action. But the agency also announced that it would begin administrative proceedings to terminate federal funding to K-12 programs. The state received more than $280 million in federal funds last fiscal year, although it was unclear Friday how much of that could be at stake. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
The American Civil Liberties Union of Maine is suing the Trump administration on behalf of two human rights advocates, including one based in Maine. The suit, filed jointly with the National ACLU, says the Trump administration's sanctions against the International Criminal Court violate the First Amendment by prohibiting advocates from communicating with the court. One of the plaintiffs, Matthew Smith, is a Maine resident and co-founder of the group Fortify Rights, which investigates human rights violations in Southeast Asia. In a statement, he says the sanctions actively undermine international justice efforts by forcing his group to stop helping the ICC investigate torture, human trafficking, and other crimes in Myanmar. The ACLU filed a similar lawsuit in 2020 during the first Trump administration. Maine's highest court has struck down an appeal by two coastal conservation groups who challenged the state permits for Kingfish Maine to build an aquaculture facility in Jonesport. With the latest ruling, Kingfish has all the local, state, and federal permits needed to operate a yellowtail fish farm, but operations manager Tom Sorby says there's no timeline yet for operations to begin because the project has been delayed for 4 years.
While the economy might be uncertain, there's a lot of technological advancements that have happened over the years.
Sorby says those advancements may be used to refine Kingfish's plan for the Jonesport facility. Fish farm opponents argued that the Board of Environmental Protection should have been required to assess the site's impacts under the Natural Resources Protection Act. As President Donald Trump continues to impose steep import taxes on foreign goods, he's rattled financial markets, raised prices for American consumers, and brought the U.S. economy to the brink of recession. Some members of Congress, including most of Maine's congressional delegation, are increasingly uneasy. But as Steve Missler reports, efforts to curtail Trump's tariff power are likely going nowhere.
Maine Public asked each member of the congressional delegation several questions. Among them, do you understand the president's tariff policy?
I think you're dignifying it by using the word policy. There's no policy I can discern.
Senator Angus King is an independent who caucuses with Democrats. He says the president's whiplash tariff rollout has been haphazard, with no clear path to achieving his stated goal of reviving American manufacturing.
Tariffs have gone off, gone on, come back. He said last week we will never reduce these. This is fixed. And then all of a sudden yesterday there's the 90-day pause. So I don't think anybody understands what the policy is.
And that, King says, includes members of the Trump administration. Last week, the president announced so-called reciprocal tariffs on goods coming from every country across the globe, including some places that aren't countries at all. He called it Liberation Day. But his formula for assessing the import taxes confounded just about everyone. The move sent financial markets into a tailspin. Worse, says Democratic Representative Shelley Pingree, the bond market, typically a safe haven during uncertainty, began to tank.
As one member said to me, you know, stocks can go up and down, but when the bond market goes to hell, you're in real trouble.
Still, the president and his aides continued to defend Trump's tariff scheme, even after he abruptly pulled back and announced a 90-day pause on his reciprocal tariffs. It happened just as his trade representative, Jamison Greer, was grilled by Democrats on the House Ways and Means Committee, including by Representative Stephen Horsford from Nevada.
Gotcha. How long is the pause? How many days? How many weeks?
I understand it's 90 days. I haven't spoken to the president since I've
been in this hearing. So the trade representative hasn't spoken to the president of the United States about a global reordering of trade.
Yes, I have. I've just been in the hearing with you, sir.
But yet he announced it on a tweet? WTF? Who's in charge?
Trump is in charge. And that, Pingree says, is the problem.
I do not believe the president should have this unilateral power.
No member of Maine's congressional delegation does. But they have different views of how much power a president should have. Representative Jared Golden, a Democrat representing Maine's more conservative 2nd District, has largely supported the president's moves on import taxes. The White House even cited his praise for Trump's 10% universal tariffs announced on so-called Liberation Day. Golden notes that presidents, including Trump, don't have unilateral power to impose tariffs.
And I would not want any president to have such power.
It's true that presidents aren't supposed to have that power except during emergencies. Asked if he believes Trump is operating within the bounds of that authority, Golden said,
"It feels like a more dangerous world with some other countries out there who aren't friendly to the United States. Like, yeah, actually, I think that there is a justification, like a nexus that brings together national security and trade."
Golden says he doesn't necessarily agree with every move Trump has made, but he understands the larger strategic goal of reordering global trade and reshoring American manufacturing.
But again, that doesn't mean that they are executing that plan as optimally as they could, or perhaps maybe even clumsily in some instances here.
And that, King says, is the reason why Congress is supposed to have a role in reviewing and approving tariffs. He says Congress has incrementally surrendered that power to presidents, paving the way for Trump's actions now.
This president has chosen to define whatever he wants as an emergency and therefore undertake this drastic reordering of the world economy.
And that's making a lot of people uneasy. Patrick Woodcock of the Maine State Chamber of Commerce has said repeatedly that reshoring manufacturing is a good goal, but he has raised questions about Trump's tariffs on Maine's biggest trading partner, Canada. More recently, he's been worried about a recession created by the president's other tariff maneuvers.
We really would be swept away with any recession nationally or globally, and I think that's where everybody is racing to see the clarity of the long-term plan from the Trump administration.
Republican Senator Susan Collins this week joined a bipartisan group of senators to back a bill that would require the president to explain the rationale and impacts on new tariffs within 48 hours. Collins' press office did not make her available for an interview and instead forwarded press releases and interviews with other news outlets. In one release, Collins said the unilateral imposition of tariffs by the president without congressional oversight undermines its constitutional role and can have harmful effects on businesses and residents. She recently joined Democrats in passing a resolution that would end the emergency declaration Trump used to impose taxes on Canada, saying they would damage Maine's trade relationship and jack up prices.
And as price hikes always do, they will hurt those the most who can afford them the least.
Trump lashed out at Collins, calling her disloyal to the Republican Party. A similar backlash likely awaits other Republicans who try to reassert Congress's traditional role in setting trade policy. And Pingree says those moves and the bill terminating the emergency declaration for tariffs on goods from Canada are likely doomed.
The president is trying to act under his emergency powers, which is just the way this president acts. And what's unfortunate now is that the House has voted to give up our ability to restrain him.
Trump is using the National Emergencies Act to implement his tariff scheme. Congress can pass a resolution requiring either the House or Senate to vote on terminating that declaration within 15 days. That's exactly what the Canada bill was supposed to do, but its companion bill in the House is basically dead. That's because House Republicans voted to change the rules so that no calendar day counts toward the 15-day clock. In doing so, the GOP not only stopped time, but also their own ability to curtail President Trump's tariff spree. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
Price increases caused by tariffs are interfering with plans to revamp the former Androscoggin paper mill. John Godfrey with Godfrey Forestry Products says the facility will require equipment from Europe and electrical components from China, and that even domestic machinery is affected by the rising costs from steel tariffs. It's thrown off the estimated construction costs, Godfrey says, and there's no way to make an accurate assessment right now.
I guess in a worst case, we would just consider that with all of these factors, what looked like a great project in the fall of 2024 might not make sense at all. But we're certainly hoping that is not the outcome.
The $600 million facility would manufacture oriented strand board, a building material similar to plywood. But tariffs could also affect the construction industry, Godfrey says, lowering the demand for the product. Maine General Health is revising downward the number of positions that will be lost due to capped Maine care payments and a state budget deficit. The company's president and CEO, Nathan Howell, says 20 positions will be cut, not the 100 announced in March. The healthcare system is reducing hours and offering redeployment to dozens of other employees and leaving open positions unfilled. Howell says Maine General is looking to save roughly $30 million through the next fiscal year, which starts in July.
We need help, and it would be really nice if the state was able to help, or, you know, if our legislators were able to help us, even to consider how some bills and things that run through the state will affect employers and healthcare would be helpful.
Howell says Maine General is also freezing discretionary spending, consolidating some offices, and reducing hours and services at some locations. Anti-Trump protesters turned out yesterday in several York County towns. In Wells, some rallygoers also spoke out against the local police department becoming the first in the state to sign a cooperation agreement with Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE. Cheryl Dearman Mills, who's involved with a local group that supports immigrants, says the agreement could dissuade them from reporting crimes.
Women who may be experiencing domestic violence will be more hesitant to reach out to the police once they become aware that there will be an immediate connection to ICE.
A Wells police captain has said the department would use the expanded authority to enforce federal deportation warrants without first having to call in immigration agents from as far away as Boston. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Join us tomorrow morning at 8 for Weekend Edition on Maine Public Radio. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening.